we're going to be back in Mark chapter 8. So if you guys want to go ahead and open up your Bibles to Mark 8. The title of my sermon this morning is Living Radically. Living Radically. And I've been thinking about it this past week, and I've been grappling with what it means. What it means to live radically, right? Because, I don't know, I think we hear about that. We hear about that term, what it is to live radically. And there are people out there, you guys, who live radically. Really. There really are. There are people that live crazy radically, right? In different ways. In different ways, too. And so there are some people out there, you guys, who... I mean, there's people that do live radically in different ways, okay? So there's some people who eat radically. Ever known anyone who eats radically? Ben does. Maybe Ben, you do eat radically, do you? Okay. It's yourself that eats radically. All right. There's some people out there who eat really radically. Have you ever heard this? Look at this. If I can switch it. Okay. There we go. All right. You ever hear that? Eat raw, live long. Anyone hear what it is to have a raw food diet? Anyone know that term? Yeah, exactly. Crazy, isn't it? Right, a raw food diet is just what it sounds like. It's eating everything not cooked. It's eating raw. So there's those who eat raw that aren't vegans, who eat, you know, just vegetables, fruit. They're just not cooked. Usually it's organic stuff. They're really, you know, into this kind of movement of eating raw. There's some that just eat, that aren't vegans, but they eat, you know, vegetables, fruit, eggs. Ooh, not good. Fish, milk, cheese, and it's all raw, right? All raw, okay? And I call it eating radically because, you know, if you look at how people eat in the United States, probably 0.001% eat raw. I mean, it's outside the cultural norm, right? So some people live radically in the way that they eat. And, you know, I actually saw a show on this where people were, you saw people in their kitchen and they were just slicing like radishes and watercress nuts and stuff like that. They spent a lot of time just eating, is what they did, and preparing their raw food, okay? There's some people who travel radically. And this one actually seems kind of cool to me, like exciting to me. This does not sound exciting to me. This one does sound exciting to me. Okay, this is Jamie Neal and Garrett Hand. They're a couple that's been in the news recently. They're from California, right? And I think it's Garrett. I think he works at a bike shop in California. And you know, repairing bikes, selling bikes, and stuff like that. And this couple, they had this idea. They're like, okay, what we want to do is we want to bike through Mexico, through South America. We just want to get on our bikes. We plan this trip. They met each other like a couple years ago. They've been planning this trip to like bike through Mexico, South America, like all the way down, you know. And before they left, the owner of the bike store is like, no, I don't think you guys should go through Mexico. Like, I mean, have you guys read the news lately? It's just kind of dangerous. I think you guys should start in South America. So they actually did. They flew down, started at the tip of South America, and they've been biking down. You know, and part of me, that sounds actually kind of fun to me. Like, to take a trip like that where you just get on your bike and you just, like, ride your bike for, you know, like 1,000 miles. I mean, not, like, continuously, but, like, just, you know, you stop and you just go in different places. So it sounds pretty cool. And you guys, for them, though, I hope it turns out well. But right now, for them, they actually Garrett had been Facebooking, and it just stopped. All of a sudden, it just stopped, and there's been no contact with them. And the last time they were heard, he sent out a Facebook that they were in Peru, and he's like, "Oh, we finally found mac and cheese in South America," you know. And so, but that was the last one. And right now, they're like, "These guys are missing." That's why they've been in the news recently. There's another couple. These guys are in their mid-20s. They're like, "Yeah, let's just go out and just, like, let's just do something crazy," you know. There's another couple in their mid-30s who are British. They're from England, and they went through Europe. They biked through Europe. They biked through the Middle East. Their dream was to bike the world, bike the whole world. And so they went through Europe. They went through the Middle East. They went through China. So they just, I don't know how many miles it is biking. But a radical lifestyle, right? Really crazy. Does that sound interesting to anyone? Would anyone want to do that? Okay, it's just Ben. Anyone? Grace would, yeah. Grace likes to travel. I mean, there's something that's like, oh, wouldn't it be great to stay in youth hostels and just, you know, just go out there and bike and just, like, see everything? That sounds fun to me. There's people that have radical hobbies, okay? This guy is, his name is Alex Hanold, and his hobby is free solo climbing. Free solo climbing. And all that means is that when he climbs, he doesn't climb with any rope or any belay. So, like, when you see this cliff here, when you see, like, that's not a rope, that's a crack in the wall, you guys. And he's like, he is climbing without anything, and he, like, scales these walls. And it's just, I mean, that's just radical. That's just, like, crazy to me. That's just nuts to me. And he dropped out of UC Berkeley. He was an engineering major, UC Berkeley, at the age of 18, and he devoted all his time to climbing. And I wondered, like, and what he does is he lives out of his van, so that he can follow the weather and climb all the time. So he just goes place to place, and he just scales these walls. A lot has been written about him, because it's weird for someone to be able to scale a wall, like, just with bare hands, you know. And so I've watched some video on him. It's pretty amazing. And I wanted to show this picture of his hands, because his hands, like, it doesn't show real well, but his hands are just, like, muscle bound. His fingers are, like, crazy strong. So, like, if you flip his hands over, it's like he's just got these huge hands. Because, like, what he can do is he can take two fingers and he can pull his whole body up with just two fingers hanging off like this. He can go, because he's just that strong, because that's all he does is he climbs, and so his hands are just crazy strong. All right, so these are things, eating radically, traveling radically, radical hobbies. Some people live their lives, like, just not in the norm of society, okay? But what does it mean? Okay, what does it mean to live radically in Christ? Okay, what does it mean to live radically in Christ? And the passage that we're looking at this morning, Jesus gives us a pretty radical invitation. Okay, and if it's like we've heard this before, but if you actually consider the invitation that he's asking, what he's saying to us, is like, if you consider what it means, it's a pretty radical lifestyle. It's a pretty radical life, right? Before we look at our passage, I want to share with you one more story, okay? One more story of where radical living can lead you, okay? This guy here, his name is Saeed Abedini, and he's Iranian-American. He and his wife met in 2002 in Iran, and they were once Muslim in Iran. He was born in Iran. He's now an American citizen. He became an American citizen in 2010. Hold on to your question, okay? Just hold on to it, Thomas, okay? 2010, he became an American. And they worked together, he and his wife. And just keep in mind, again, that in Iran, if you move from being a Muslim to becoming a Christian, you can face the death penalty. So in the country of Iran, if you're Muslim, if you're born Muslim and you say, I'm going to follow Jesus Christ, they can say to you, we're going to take your life, right? The penalty would be for waging war against Islam. That's why they would take your life, is because you became a Christian, so you're waging war against Islam. And they worked together in the underground church movement, and then in 2005 they moved to the United States, moved to Idaho, to Boise, Idaho, after kind of facing persecution because of the ministry they were doing in Iran. And so knowing that he could be arrested, you know, if he went back to Iran, he's gone back several times. Mainly, he said before he left in 2005, he said, look, they said, we are going to imprison you if you don't move out. Okay, you and your wife will be in prison if you're not out of here. If you continue to do this, we're going to put you in prison. And so that's when they decided to move out to the United States. But they've gone back several times, and partly they've gone back because his family is there, her family is there, so they've gone back several times. Actually, like 9 or 10 times they've gone back to Iran just to go, hey, we just want to... They've brought their kids back. They have 2 children. We've got 2 kids. So they've gone back several times. And so, but what he's done is he's started an orphanage. He wanted to start an orphanage in Iran in the city of Rasht. It's kind of like a tourist city on the sea. And he wanted to start an orphanage there. So last summer, July of 2012, he was going in from, he was crossing the border from Turkey to Iran on a bus. And the border patrol there took his passport and put him under house arrest because they kind of knew who he was. They kind of recognized who he was. And then eventually they transferred him to a place called Evin, E-V-I-N, prison. He's in prison currently right now, and he was awaiting trial, Evin prison is it's a well-known prison. It's known for its political, prisoners, and it's known for it's a rough place, really, really rough place to be. And, on January 27th, was just a little over a month ago, he was sentenced to 8 years in prison, mainly for the work that he was doing in the early 2000s. So it wasn't something recently. And the judge, who's a well-known judge there, who's kind of a harsher judge, sentenced to 8 years for threatening the national security of Iran through his leadership in Christian house churches. So you guys, I mean, I guess I'm thinking, like, knowing that he was risking his time with his family, he was risking time, his life, he's still going back to Iran following Jesus to start this orphanage. And he counted the cost. He must have known that, like, hey, when I cross the border from Turkey to Iran, he must have thought, like, if I get stopped, there's a possibility. And again, he said, I'm not going to do the underground church anymore, I'm just going to do this orphanage, but there's a possibility that I might not return, you know? And so right now, I guess I want to stop you, and I want you guys to just consider to, would you pray for Saeed? Would you pray for him? Would you pray for his family? I mean, there's a lot of, if you go on Google right now, and if you type his name in, you'll find there's a lot of press. There's a lot of international press for him. So that's a good thing that he's going for him, that, like, a lot of people are watching him, a lot of people are aware of what's happening, and a lot of people are putting on pressure. I know, Senator Kerry, John Kerry, who just became the Secretary of State, I know that he's like, Marco Rubio went to him, another senator went to him, and another congressman went to him and said, look, I want you to, like, talk to Iran to get this guy out. He's done no crime. He's committed no crime. Except for starting up an orphanage and telling people about Jesus. But listen to what he wrote, okay? I want to read to you what Saeed wrote. He's allowed to call his parents once a week. For a few minutes, he can call his parents on Wednesdays for once a week. But a letter came out from him, and he said this: "They are trying to put me under such horrific pressures so that they can show they can show me that my faith is empty and not real. And after all these pressures, after all the nails they've pressed into my hands and feet, they are only waiting for one thing, for me to deny Christ. But they will never get this from me, all right? She's like, if it means staying here for the rest of my life, never seeing my family again, I won't deny Christ, right? I won't cave in. That to me, wow, that is like really radical living, isn't it? That's like putting your life out there to go, this is it, Jesus. Like, if this is how it ends, if my days end like this, this means, if this is what it means for me to follow you, then I will do it. All right? So let's take a look, you guys, at this invitation that he's making to us, that Jesus is making to us. And in Mark chapter, starting in verse 34, he says this: Then he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me and the gospel will save it. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world, yet to forfeit his soul? Or what can a man give in exchange for his soul? If anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. And he said to them, I tell you the truth, some who are standing here will not taste death before they see the kingdom of God come with power. Okay, so you guys, we've gone through this several times, the passage leading up right before it, right? We've talked about this several times. Peter has just said, you are the Messiah, you're the one. And then we talked a little bit about he didn't quite have the meaning of what Messiah was. Jesus, he had this idea of the Messiah being of someone who would save them from Rome. And we talked a little bit about like how we sometimes have an idea of God. We have sometimes an idea of Jesus, of who we want him to be. But sometimes he's like, no, that's not who I am. Who I am is this. And what he told his disciples was, you want me to be this Messiah, but I am telling you, I am Messiah that's going to lay down his life for the world, right? And Peter didn't take it very well. He's like, no, no, sir, you will not. That is not who I want you to be, right? I says, yes, Peter, this is what I'm about. This is what I must do, okay? So that's the context. He am just saying that this is, I'm going to lay down my life. And now the context is he turns to the crowd with the disciples there and he says to them, you must also, okay? He's about to model in a few weeks from this passage, you know, moving forward, he would do the very thing that he's telling his followers to do. And so there's three requirements, you guys. There's three requirements, really simple requirements, of what he's asking the crowd to do, this invitation that he is making to those who would follow him. Three things, okay? The first thing is, we must deny ourselves. Again, the greatest thing about Jesus is that he doesn't just tell them to deny themselves. He's again willing to do that. And Jesus, it's interesting, you guys. The thing is that Jesus does not ask followers to deny something to themselves. He's not like saying, don't deny, like, don't take on this or this or this. He's asking them to deny something to themselves. He's saying, I want you to deny yourself, okay? And so I when we look at this phrase, we must deny ourselves, I want us to kind of like stay on it for a moment, okay? Because I'm like, what does it mean to deny ourselves? And I want to be careful about how I frame this for you. Because I think that it can be, in our minds, when we hear this, it can become twisted in our minds when we think about this. It can be like maybe skewed. And so I really want to take some time to go, hey, what does this mean when he's talking about to deny ourselves? So I want to start out by saying what it isn't, okay? Let's talk about what it isn't to deny ourselves. Okay? It isn't asceticism. Okay? Okay, does anyone have this word? I mean, we've talked about some crazy words in the past. We've talked about transcendence, right? A little while ago, we talked about what transcendence means. We talked about what immanence means. Anyone have, just review, anyone have transcendence? What does that mean? Anyone want to step out there? Anyone remember? Come on. So yeah, what was it? What did you say over there? Going over what we know. So right, outside of what we know. So we said God is outside of what we know. There's part of God that is like way, way outside of anything we know. You know, and I took the example out of Revelations. You know, the throne room was like, that is just way outside anything. What's immanence? Within the bounds of what we know, right? So there's ways that we can really, I can really relate to God. I can really know him, right? What is, anyone, this like quiz for ACT. I always say, hey, we're preparing for ACTs, SATs. What's asceticism? Does anyone know? Anyone heard that word? Anyone got it? Kevin Chick said no. No, no one's got it. Anyone? John, do you know what? I mean, I actually don't know. Had I not thought about this, I wouldn't have known. Like, if someone would just ask me, like, 2 weeks ago, I don't know what it said. What, do you know what? Yes. You're like, what's esoteric? Right, right. Okay, so yeah. Yeah. Just what you said. The principles and practices of it. Let's see, this is what I... Of an aesthetic. Extreme self-denial and austerity. That doesn't really help me all that much. But here's another one. Okay. From the Greek. Hastesis. Exercise or training. Describes a lifestyle characterized by abstinence from various worldly pleasures, often with the aim of pursuing religious and spiritual goals, okay? And so, when we deny ourselves, okay, it's not asceticism, okay? So it's not like, oh, let's push away everything around us. Let's not take on any worldly pleasures at all. Let's just like push everything away so that what? He's not telling us to push everything on any worldly pleasure, just shove it out of me. Because what happens is this. This is what someone who is practicing asceticism. So there's some beliefs out there that says, look, if we just empty ourselves out of any worldly pleasures, okay, that's how we can connect with a transcendent God somehow. We push out everything, okay? So it's not asceticism. And the difference is, asceticism and what Jesus is telling us to, when we deny ourselves, is that Jesus is telling us to deny, when Jesus is telling us to deny ourselves, it's based on relationship, and it's based on love, okay? What's that, Thomas? I couldn't hear you. I don't know, man. I don't know. But it's based on relationship and love, okay? So here's an example of relationship, okay? We know that Jesus, in relationship to the Father, and to what the Father was telling him, denied himself, okay? So when the Father said, Son, in order for you to take on the sin of the world, you need to go to the cross, right? And that's where when Jesus was in Gethsemane, when he said, not my will be done, but your will be done, he was denying himself, but not for the purpose of simply just denying himself. It was all a relationship with the Father. And love. Relationship with the Father and love. And that's the difference between asceticism and denying ourselves. To deny ourselves what Jesus is inviting us to do to follow him. Okay? So here's an example. Let me bring it a little bit closer to us. Okay, so this past year, I showed a couple videos. I showed two videos of guys who were denying themselves video games. Okay, two videos. One was in I don't know if you remember last summer. One was in it was called the Surrender series, and there was a guy who, it showed images of him in his family room playing video games and such. He was playing video games, and he was talking about surrendering, of course. And but what he was saying, one of the things he was saying that he noticed that when he was playing video games, his parents would be asking him and talking to him, and he's like, what I noticed about myself is that I wouldn't even hear my mom and dad. I would stop relating to them. I'd stop talking to them. I didn't even hear what they were saying. And he said, also, in my relationship with God, I stopped talking to God. Instead of connecting with God in prayer, instead of meeting with Him in scriptures, he said, I just wasn't. And it was cool. The video was really cool because it's like he struggled. He's like, he needed God's help. He wanted it. He wanted God. He realized that I want a relationship with my parents. And he said at one point he took his video games and he threw them away. And again, I know that some of the stuff is online. I mean, a lot of the stuff is online now. So I know it's like you can't throw away online. I guess you can throw away your laptop. But he struggled with it. And finally, he's like, yeah. And remember, you guys, do you remember what happened in the end? I don't know if you guys remember the video. It was quite a while ago. But what he ended up doing, he's like, I threw it away. I struggled with it so much. I brought it back. And then I put it aside again. And he said, I eventually went on a missions trip. And he's like, I just began to walk with God more and more and became more and more fulfilled with Him. And it became less and less for me. And then the other one was a guy from OCS, Oakland Christian School. He was a senior, and we had Joe took some video of this guy who got up in front of the senior class and like smashed his game console, right? Right? And he's like, I would spend the equivalent of what it was to work at a job, like 40 hours a week playing video games, right? But it's all, what they were doing though, it was all based in relationship because it was affecting the relationships. It was affecting their love. Different from asceticism, okay? Different from asceticism. Because sometimes I think with Christianity and following Jesus, sometimes we can confuse it and go, I just need to get rid of stuff, right? But it's all based on what you hear from the Lord. All based on your relationship, what you hear from Him. So it can vary. It can vary of what He's asking you to deny. It's always based in relationship, always based in love, and it's based on what you hear from Him. Some of the things we already know. Some of the things, like I said, some things you don't ever have to pray about because it's just written out. You don't know, should I give up pornography? You already know. You just know. But there's other things, like video games, that it's like, well, it's not evil. There's nothing, I mean, there's some stuff that's just really raunchy with video games. But overall, like, it's kind of like neutral, right? So there's some things that's just based on what you hear from the Lord. So it's not legalism. It's always based on relationship. Here's a helpful quote of what it means to deny yourself. Those who deny themselves say no to the I that would enslave themselves, would enslave them, and say yes to God who leads them to life. Okay? Those who deny themselves say no to the I that would enslave them and say yes to God who leads them to life. Okay? Here's one more. This is Dietrich Bonhoeffer. To deny oneself is to be aware of only of Christ and no more of self, to see only Him who goes before and no more the road which is too hard for us. Once more, all that is self-denial can say is, He leads the way, keep close to Him. I'm not sure if I quite full-on agree. I mean, sometimes I think, I don't know, like, is not aware of ourself. But it's like this. I hear sometimes it's like, to deny oneself is when you become fuller with Christ. Again, you guys, when you're in love, right, it becomes easier. Again, I was talking with Joe just even on Friday. We had those conversations like, man, think about it. When you first fall in love with someone and you're just like, I'm just crazy for this person. I'm just nuts for this person. You write poetry to them. You like give them gifts. You shower them with stuff, right? You like spend time thinking about them. You know, you just, and you're actually denying yourself. But it's easy, right? It just becomes like, no problem. This person's awesome. I just love them. They're just so, you know, it's easy, right? Right? And so this is kind of what he's talking. And you become less aware of yourself because you're just like so like just caught up in that person, right? Yeah. And so that's what he's talking about. That's what it is to deny yourself. Okay. So So let me give you a picture of what it would look like to deny ourselves. I need a volunteer. Okay, Jerry, come on up. Okay. All right. So I think what the picture is. Turn around here, Jerry. Come this way a little bit. Perfect. Okay. Is that, look, can you start putting these on your body, like in your chest, or stomach, in your forehead, or whatever you want, wherever you want to put it. Here you go. Inspirations, money. Yeah, I don't know if it'll stay there. Here you go. Okay, so here we are. Aspirations, goals, dreams, money, material things, time, and talents, right? We have all these things. And the thing is that what God says is like he never says like don't have aspirations or don't have goals or don't have money or don't have material things. Again, asceticism would say, No, you got to take all this away. You got to empty yourselves of all this. So it's never like, so asceticism would take all that stuff away and say, no, you got to push all that away. You can never have any kind of material things. You can never enjoy anything. It's not like, so that's what asceticism would say. Can you put your hands up like just like this? Okay. What denying ourselves is us saying, look, God says, look, Jerry, you can dream. Have aspirations. Make, with your vocation, the thing that I've called you to do, earn money, earn lots of money. You can have material things. You can have, you know, you can have dreams. You can set goals, right? Right there. To deny ourselves, though, is to say, look, is not to take it away, but to go, but it's all ultimately, I'm giving it all to you. I'm putting it on the altar to go, look, have it all. I'm going to, God, here's my dreams, here's my goals, here's everything I have, but just go ahead and, like, if you want to change it, if you want to move it, if you want to alter it, if you want to take it out and put something else in it, go ahead and do it. Because I know what you have is better for me. I know what you have is way better than I can dream or imagine. So go ahead and take it, right? But it does, self-denial is saying, okay, but go ahead and take it. I'm laying it down for you. I'm denying myself because I know what you have is way better. So are you guys willing to do that? And I know, I mean, if you're honest with yourselves, and I'm honest with myself, sometimes it's like, no, there's stuff that I want to hold on to. And part of it is like, okay, then, Lord, if you need to, like, peel my fingers back, then do it. That's what my attitude wants to be. If you need to peel my fingers back to make me let go, then please do it. Because sometimes I can't let go, right? I can't. But that's what self-denial is. Thanks, Jerry. Okay? That's what self-denial is. And so it can come out in different ways, right? Denying ourselves takes different shapes and forms, okay? So if you're proud, it might be renouncing the desire for status and honor. If you're greedy, it might be renouncing appetite for wealth and stuff. If you're complacent, it might be abandoning the ease of the love of ease. Okay, so it can come in different forms. So sometimes, like, you may have the dream of, like, I've always envisioned myself, you know, we have a lot of Michigan people here right now. You just got blue. You got blue and blue everywhere, blue and maize everywhere here, you know. And there's some that are like, hey, like, okay, I'll just share with you, my daughter, you guys, is already a Michigan fan. She's already been sold out to Michigan. She's like blue and maize. She's like, because I don't know where she hears it in school, but she's like, you know, what does she chant? She chants like, go Michigan, boo Michigan State. Can you believe that? She already is getting fed this, right? You know, so it's in school. So I'm saying Morgan already has this plan, this dream of going to Michigan, okay? I don't know where we didn't tell her that per se. She just gets it, you know? And, but what I'm saying to you is that God may tell you, based on your relationship with Him, based on what He's asking you, He may take what you've planned and put it, He may ask you to go to a different college. He may have a different plan for you. He may say, look, you've always had this idea in your mind, Morgan, but I've got something else for you. In fact, I want you to go to Liberty College. I want you to go to Hope. I want you to go to, I don't know where. I don't know where. It doesn't have to be a Christian college. It can be someplace, you know. I'm just saying, like, He may take those, okay? So the things that you have, you hold, and some people really do, like, I will go to Michigan. Oh, yes, I will. You know, like that. You know, it's like, this is what their plan is. So some of you, it may mean, like, going to a place that you didn't think you'd ever go to, okay? For some of you, it may mean cutting off your account with LOL or StarCraft. It could mean that. You know, it could mean, like, you just gotta slice it. You just gotta, I'm telling you to deny yourself because I want your heart. And so some of you, it may mean, like, take the LOL, take your account, take your whatever your name is, and slice it off. Just cut it. Like Eric, when he came back, remember when he came back from Urbana? He was like, yeah, it's like, I cut it off. I sliced it. I took the plunge, right? Because I'm denying myself because I want Him. I want more of Him, all right? For some of you, it may mean choosing not to be in a dating relationship. It may mean that. I'm not saying it is. I'm not saying that you have to cut off LOL. I'm not saying you might not have to. I'm just saying it just may mean it, right? It may mean wait, okay? All right. But that's radical living, you guys. It's just like, that's what radical living is. That's what it is. Okay, so here's the second requirement. Second requirement is we must take up our cross, okay? All right, so just remember when he says this, he says, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross. You guys have to remember that this sounded really, really bizarre to the disciples at the time, you know? Because remember, we have it in our minds. It's very clear to us what the cross meant. And people wear, like, cross necklaces. But to them, it was still, in their minds at the time, it was still a mechanism for execution, for torture. And so it's just like, when he says it for the first time, if you can have the ears of the disciples for the first time, and he says, deny yourself, take up your cross. I imagine the disciples were like, What are you talking about? What are you saying? Like, this is weird. You know, this is odd. This is bizarre. You know, I mean, because again, we have, anyone have a cross necklace on right now? Anyone wearing one? You've got one? Let's see it. Okay, yeah, so Jimmy's wearing a cross necklace right now. And we have the meaning, in our minds, we have the meaning of what the cross stands for, right? But for them, it's weird. Like Randy Johnson said, it's almost like, for them, the cross is almost like the electric chair is for us, right? It would be like having an electric chair around our necks, right? And be like, oh, where'd you get that electric chair? That's beautiful, you know? And Jimmy would be like, I got it at Claire's. It was on sale, you know, like something like that, you know? Oh, that's a great electric chair. That's beautiful, right? So you got to remember, for the disciples, it was bizarre to think about, like, having a kind of thinking about taking up your cross would be like, yeah, taking up your electric chair and walking with it, right? But what he's saying here is he's telling us to the extent of which we must deny ourselves, okay? He's telling us to the extent that he's wanting to deny ourselves. When I talk about, I know because you guys are open with me and you guys share and it's all over your Facebook. It's all over. I know that you guys, and you guys talked about it openly. Like, I just love StarCraft. You know, like Vince was, StarCraft, yes! Right? Or League of Legends, right? You know, just stuff like that. You're just like, yeah. And I know there's these things that, or I know that like for Morgan, I know it's like Michigan, you know, like there's certain things. But for what he's saying here to take up our cross, it's like, you know what, you guys? For Morgan, he was saying like to drop your idea of going to Michigan, or to drop video game, or to drop football, or he's like, he would say, Jesus, like, when I say this, that stuff is just a drop in the bucket. It's just a drop in the bucket to let go of like a video game or a hobby or something that you, he's like, I'm not asking just for that. I'm asking for your whole life. I'm asking for it all. I'm asking for everything from you. I'm asking to the extent, to the point where you'd say, well, I guess like Saeed, I'm willing to give up everything. I'm willing to give up it all things that I have, everything that I hold dearly, because I find you more dear to my heart than anything else. And it's like, it is what he's asking is a radical, radical following. Just this crazy, crazy, crazy following. Okay? So let me go with the last one. So that's the extent. He's asking all the way to the end, to our laying down our lives, which Saeed might eventually be doing. Here's the last thing. We must follow him. All right, deny ourselves, pick up our cross, and follow him. You know, and the funny thing about Jesus is that he makes it hard. Okay, if you guys flip with me to Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9, starting in verse 57 through 62. As they were walking along the road, a man said to him, I will follow you wherever you go. Jesus replied, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. He said to another man, follow me. But the man replied, Lord, first let me go and bury my father. Jesus said to him, let the dead bury their own dead, but you go and proclaim the kingdom of God. Still another said, I will follow you, Lord, but first let me go back and say goodbye to my family. Jesus replied, no one who puts his hand to the plow looks back is fit for service in the kingdom of God. So it's like you have three people who like, well, what? I want to follow you. And you know what, you think like if Jesus and like the disciples, and oftentimes they're like, they're standing there, someone says, hey, I want to follow you, I want to go with you guys. Sometimes you'd think Jesus would be like, yeah, hey, look, here's someone who has an open heart. Here's someone who wants to follow me. Come along. But he says stuff like this. He says, look, foxes have no hole, have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. It's almost like he's trying to talk people out of following him. Or there's sometimes when he gets up in front of a crowd and you think, oh, this is an awesome opportunity for him to grab some followers, you know? He could explore his movement from here. He could bring in so many more people. But then he gets up and he says like something like, you know, you must eat my body and drink my blood. And people are like, what? What? What are you talking about? And the disciples must be standing him going, what are you talking about? Crazy that you wanted people to follow you. But he's saying, look, if you don't eat my body and drink my blood, you have no part of me. You know, and so it's like, you're losing followers, Jesus. But he seems to almost make it like, if you don't give yourself over, you're not going to be able to follow me. you're not going to be able to follow me, right? And so part of what this is following him means obedience.